for you once more for those people who were over there watching David Cassidy and screaming at David Cassidy and even digging his music at White City, I believe it was. Well, for those people, now here's David to talk to you. Not to be interfered with, you'll hear every word he has to say, and he's got a lot to say.
Good evening, this is Radio Luxembourg. Listen! A crowd in a street? Yes, but not just any sort of a crowd, though. Not just any street, for that matter. It's Thursday the 23rd of May. The street is Hartford Street, London W1. And the crowd stand outside the Radio Luxembourg London headquarters. The kids are Cassidy loyalists. They've been there most of the morning, just with the promised glimpse of the guy they love. The police stand guard. The traffic's diverted. Every window in Hartford Street holds a face or two. Faces that show humor and often tinges of respect for the kids who stud the ground regardless of the rain. Chanting and chanting and chanting their chant. Inside, things were calmer. David had been sneaked into the studio round the bike. The Radio Luxembourg Cassidy Interview 74 was about to take place.
This is Tony Prince.
Hi, this is Dave Christian.
It's Mark Wesley.
Now, we're sitting around a table with superstar David Cassidy. Welcome back to Great Britain and Radio Luxembourg, David.
Well, thanks.
Nice to have
y'all.
David, we'll get straight down to it. The last time I saw you was Christmas, and you were really looking forward to finishing the Partridge Family.
Yeah.
Now, that's all gone.
Done. How do you feel? I feel sick. No, I feel very well. I'm glad it's all over and done with, and it's good. It was 4 years and a little too long, perhaps, but nevertheless, it was, I think, for the most part...
experience.
Yeah, it was an experience, one that I'm sure I'll never forget.
Many treasured memories amongst those periods of time?
Ones that, there are a lot of good ones amongst some of the bad ones. The thing that really disturbed me about it was that it was so time-consuming, and I was wasting my time, you know?
Yeah. Were you really wasting your time?
Well, I wasn't.
Look at the career that you've been in.
Yeah, I mean,
you've been
I think for a couple of years it was good, and it was fun, but when you start doing the same thing every day, you know, every day of the week, week after week after week, you feel like, well, you know, I should be doing something else. I should be growing. I should be...
You feel like life is a holiday now that it's all over, in comparison.
Life's a holiday. Not as long. No, I don't feel like it's a holiday yet. I think that perhaps in about 6 months from now, when I get, you know, over the shock of it all, it'll probably be a holiday. Yeah, I mean, I'll probably have a lot of fun. I'm having fun now.
It's
since the Partridge Family finished, have you had any serious offers for film parts?
Yeah, I have. Even while it was happening, there were serious offers, but they weren't seriously considered, only because they were, you know, I don't mean to put people of the film industry down, but most of them don't have a great imagination, you know?
Yeah.
And I suppose that is kind of...
Well, they were offering you parts, the sort of part that you were doing then.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they just see it's boy and a dog, and it's, you know, me being 18 years old. And I have to cop to the fact that I do look younger than 24, but nevertheless, I am 24, and...
That's pretty young, David. I mean, Mark West is 39.
Yeah, Tony's 24 this year.
That's a lot
and a whole lot more.
Is there any truth in the rumor that you're having an affair with David
Bridges? What? There has been a lot of talk. That's why I wore these rhinestone boots.
I just got a little message on the window there from David to give him a name check, so I give him his name check. David, let's talk about the tour.
Let's not talk about him.
Let's plug that. The tour comes to an end. At the end of this week.
Mm-hmm.
This is coming out on the 208 on Sunday night. In fact, you're probably on stage at the time this is going out.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to go to Manchester, and then is that the end of the world tour?
Manchester's the last date, on Tuesday night. It is the end of the world tour. It's the end of me touring the world. It's the end of touring in general.
Are you imagining that you're going to become virtual recluse?
No. I mean,
you're going to...
Quite the opposite, you know. I mean, because of the touring and stuff, I became a recluse, you know, hotel rooms and...
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
But I mean a recluse in the traditional sense. But I mean, I hear that you have an island or planning to move to an island near Hawaii or on Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
To spend more time by yourself, maybe getting yourself together.
Those are all broad exaggerations of the facts, but nevertheless...
Okay, so what are the facts?
The facts are that I do have a considerable amount of land, and I don't have a house there, but I want to build a house there. And it is on or about or near the island of Hawaii. And, it's difficult for me to get into a lot of detail because I don't know what I'm going to do. And I don't know when it's going to come about. But I do know I want to build a house there, and I would like to live there at least part of the year.
Is it just that you know what you want to do, but you don't know what you don't want to do?
You know you're sick of the Frottage family. You know you're sick of touring.
It's not
you don't know what else you want to do. It's just that you're tired of it.
You've done so much of it, do you think?
No, I've done too much. I mean, I'm really tired, but it wasn't like I was sick of it, you know? I mean, it didn't make me sick, the thought of it, doing the Frottage family. It was just there were too many other things I wanted to do. You know, I just didn't, I mean, I was going to work every morning, waking up at 6 o'clock and saying, well, now I'm blowing the whole day here inside a movie studio with makeup on, whitening up, saying these dumb things. And I don't want to do that, you know? I mean, I'd much rather be home outside, you know.
And they were long hours, weren't they? Long
12 hours a day, you know?
Yeah.
Is there anything that's ever crossed your mind that you feel that you could really play well as a character, or something you feel you see yourself particularly being able to do?
Shakespeare? No. God, you know, I could never do any of that. Most American actors...
How do you know you never...
Cannot. Well, because I sat in the bathroom the other night and said... I could never do that. It's, I think to do Shakespeare, at least, I mean, it requires a lot of training, I think, you know, and, I don't have that kind of training.
Got to give your life up to it, really.
You essentially do, you know.
Yeah.
And I think most American actors, because just in the way that we talk, it never sounds...
It doesn't come across
honest
the same.
At all.
Yeah.
It sounds so dishonest to hear someone say, on the fourth night of, you know, it just doesn't work, you know.
At the same pace, you know, a Shakespearean actor probably couldn't do a natural part like you've been doing in the Partridge.
Well, I mean, at least not the typical Springfield, Massachusetts American family, no.
You do want to play any straight parts.
So I would like to do some...
See, stretch yourself, see how far you can go. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what I'd like to do. You know, I haven't really had that much opportunity in the last 4 years to do that. And before I started doing the Partridge Family, I was working in dramatic shows, and I did a Broadway show and stuff, and I was seriously thinking about becoming an actor forever.
I'm just wondering what you'd look like with a Gatsby-type look, if you were acting that way.
Quite honestly, I was thinking about not getting a Gatsby kind of haircut, but... cutting my hair off and stuff, because I...
Well, that's many a parts would entail you having to do that in point of time.
And
there you
are. In fact, your new record is very Gatsby, isn't it?
A lot of people, I mean, when I got here, they said that. I mean, it's not really happening all over the world or in the United States, the Gatsby thing. I mean,
number three on tour, are you? Oh, you're talking about the Gatsby?
Yeah.
It's really taken off here, you know?
Really? It really isn't happening anywhere else. I've been all over the world, and I've even heard of people that... heard the song, like I recorded it about before the Gatsby thing
With all due respect to Gatsby being an American movie, as far as fashion is concerned, they always follow Britain, you see, David. That's where that's at.
Wake him up quickly.
If I didn't care more than words can say, this way, if this is enough, then what do I do? Then what makes my head go round and round? Well, my heart goes. If you should
The tour, then we'll go back to the tour.
Mm-hmm.
You've had a great.
I'll do on the hits, please. You know, I'll hold you.
Anything
else that happened on the tour that you'd like to say?
Anything exciting happened on this tour that hasn't happened before?
Well,
I don't need to mention a name, like.
I've been touring a long time, you know. I mean, like 3.5 years, and I can't imagine really anything that has happened that's never happened before. I mean, I just think that. The fact that this has been like my last one, I've sort of enjoyed it. I've sort of wallowed in it a little more, you know. And
yeah.
On stage, I've had a lot more fun because I'm doing now what I want to do, you know.
Do you feel the same feelings now that you felt when you first went on stage? You must have a certain amount of uncertainty makes you anxious, perhaps excited, not necessarily nervous. How do you feel now?
Well, I just feel like when I walk out on stage, if it's going to be, I mean, like I'm thinking about these next 3 days. It's just going to be like bliss for me, you know. I mean, the amount of energy that is going to be happening in that, wherever it is, venue, stadium.
Yeah.
What about your body?
We're going to get a show.
Do you have any tensions in your body before you go out on stage? Is
that a thing that happens? It depends on where it is and when it is. There are times when I don't even think about it. I just walk right out, and it's usually the times when the energy is the lowest.
Yeah.
But I really feel good, you know, and I'm looking forward to it. I do get nervous. I do get excited, and I have to pace a little bit because I can't wait to get out of there. You know, it's like revving yourself up. You know, you want to just get right out.
Let's
go on. Come on, yeah.
Yeah.
Was there ever a time in your career, David, where you reached the stage where you said, I can't go out there? Or was that maybe in the early days?
3 days ago.
Yeah?
No.
No, I mean.
No, I never said I can't go out there, you know. There are times when I didn't want to, perhaps.
Mm.
But almost every time I've performed, it's been a hard, at least to some degree. I mean, it's different every time. It's got to be different every time, you know, otherwise I'd get so bored.
Yeah. I realize that you've, you've been doing this quite some time now.
Mm.
But was there any particular point where the turn, you arrived at a corner which said, this is the sign which just made me move it alone, I've got to do something else? Or did you realize that was going to come?
You started talking with people about it and saying, well, I don't know, someone said, well, are you going to come back next year? And I thought, well, God, no, I'm not going to come back next year. I'm not going to keep
having
a habit of this. I mean, this is something, I mean, it's a special thing to me. It's, you know, it's something that, it's the second time I've been here. I mean, I've played all of the states before I ever played anywhere else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I played some places 3 and 4 times. And I found after, like, playing it twice, it became a little anticlimactic, you know. I mean, it wasn't ever as great as it was the first time or the second time.
Yeah.
Well, the third and fourth time people expect it. It's not that much of an event, you know.
How do you answer the fan, David, who was turning around naturally, who was in love with the world? Sometimes he says, well, you're not coming back anymore. You're giving up to reading with the Partridge family. You know, when am I going to see you again, you know, apart from my dream?
See,
how do you answer? How do you answer?
King's Cross, I guess.
Well, I mean, you must have thought it over. I mean, the fans really, you know, they're not like gnats who you brush away when they bite you.
Not at all.
They're all human beings, and they're growing up.
Well, you're giving them a lot of their...
As am I.
Yeah.
And that's the way I look at it, you know. I mean, it's a matter of me growing and them growing with me, and perhaps me outgrowing them and them growing into me, or them outgrowing me. And it's, that's really the whole point of it is that I have to grow as an individual and as a human being, too. And I think people that are really sincere about being my fans and that are really concerned about me understand that that's what I have to do and, care about.
Yeah.
You know, not exactly outgrow, leaving them behind, though.
No, I'm not. I mean, it's not going to be making records. I mean, I think the records I'm going to be making are going to be far better than any records I've ever made. You know?
Are they going to be perhaps more songs that you've written yourself? Is that what you'd like to be able to do?
You're
not doing it anyway, no.
I'm writing, and I'm singing songs that I composed. But I think that more than concentrating on singing, I'm never going to record anything else's songs. They're going to be all mine. I mean, I hear a lot of songs that just knock me out. You know, and I've not songs that I write, or perhaps songs that I couldn't write. You know,
as a writer, would you be influenced by anybody?
Oh, lots of people. I mean, I think everybody influences everybody else. You know, I mean, a lot of people ask me, you know, who's been your greatest influence? And I mean, I've always said, and I don't like anti YouTube. I don't like to be redundant. But
I think that
all of us, at least me, I was most impressionable in like 63, 64, 65.
Yeah.
Like I was 13, 14, 15. I was growing up in the music that was moving me then.
The Beatles,
yeah, you know? Right, yeah. So, I mean, to me, I never made a record that ever came close to me sounding like them or trying to sound like them or that had the intensity that their records had. I don't know if anybody has. In my head, I mean, when I listen to a record, there are very few records I can put on now that would electrify me the way those records electrify me then or now, you know?
It's become very, very complicated these days, isn't it?
It's really, I think everybody's just so derivative of everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, there are very few people that are innovative.
Because the Beatles were derivative of all the old rock and roll style.
Yeah, but they had their own style, and then they derived everything from, like, they were a combination of things, you know?
Yeah.
Blues and like, 50s rock, and I don't know, it just...
There's a right way of putting it over black music.
Exactly. Almost, yeah.
Yeah.
Like Chuck Berry and all those guys, you know, and Fats Domino and Buddy Holly, and I don't know, I just... It just changed my head right around. I mean, I was listening to music like the Shirelles and stuff. And they did a couple of those songs, you know, the Shirelles songs. But somehow or another, when they did it, I just was never like listening to a Shirelles record or listening to... And they were good records, too, but I
really got a hold of them.
Yeah. Those songs I listen to them. Those are the tunes I listen to and play with, you know, and then I sit around my house and I sit around and play those songs, you know.
I come looking for a little satisfaction. I don't drive no Cadillac. All I've got's hanging on to that. But I keep believing a physical attraction. Get on your clothing line. I'm gonna get back to my ride. Rock me, baby, rock me through the night.
there. Now come on and rock me. Rock me. Come on and rock me. Come on and shock me.
Artists who you really rate and admire and can listen to all night?
Mm.
I think the Beatles were the last group I could listen to all night.
Yeah.
And forever, you know.
Never stop.
I think McCartney's made a couple of really good albums.
Yeah.
Especially his last one.
Well, I'm not going to say this, especially his last one. Yeah.
Oh, well, I think his last one was better. I mean, his final was better than his others, but the one before I really liked more after that album, it just killed me, you know, when I the songs on that album, to me, were the best. The best tunes that he's written, you know, and I think he's written some real good ones since he's left. I mean, they all have. They all have in their own way, you know, and I think it's good that they're all doing their own trips now, and,
The Beatles have gone through what you're going through with the fans, mm-hmm. the fan mania.
Mm-hmm.
And George Harrison was recently quoted as saying to someone, I think it was a guy who drove him down to his house, a chauffeur or something, the chauffeur turned around and said, could I have an autograph for my niece? And George said, look, man, that's all over. That's finished. That's a thing of the past. Come in and have a drink. Join us. But that's finished.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think the punter, even myself, who hasn't experienced what you and a few other very selective people in the world have experienced, we don't fully appreciate what the pressures are.
Mm.
For example, I can say to the listener that this week alone on Radio Luxembourg, I've had 3 calls from fans of yours who have threatened to me, if I don't get them to you, they will commit suicide.
Mm.
The switchboard at Radio Luxembourg today have had 2 similar calls.
Mm.
You must have these pressures on you as well. How do you handle that within yourself when you think of the human
aspect?
You find that you do. I mean, you find that when someone says they're going to kill themselves because of you, obviously, I mean, unless you gotta have some emotion. I mean, but the thing is that you have to know that you are not in control of their lives,
mm.
and that is not what I'm out to do. I'm not out to get them to that point to where I want to see them commit suicide because of me.
Right.
I mean, I would like them. I mean, I'm a performer. You know,
it's so fun to have any conscience.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really lay it that heavily on my conscience because, I mean, I'm a performer and I'm a singer.
Sure.
And if I went through every phone call like that every day, I'd be, you know, I mean, I'd be out of Bellevue, you know, in New York, you know, in a straitjacket. Yeah, right. And I mean, there have been times when I thought about being in Bellevue anyway, but I've been in Bellevue. I just find that, you know, I mean, I have to take what I'm doing not so seriously, you know.
Mm.
And I have to look at it as just something like, okay, it's a job and something that I like doing. And I'm a singer, and I have to, I'm doing concerts, and, like, people want to come and see me and they want to dig it. They can dig it whatever they will, they want to dig it, you know? And
here's a question.
Okay.
Of all the, I mean, you had David Cassidy, which is like really something special. Now, here's a question which...
It's
pretty special to many millions of people. And something which you may interest people by answering is that is there anything you'd rather be? Can you imagine anything that you'd rather be than David Cassidy?
Oh, well.
Photographer or something.
I never think about things like that, like what would I rather be. I just would rather be like 2 years from now, maybe, you know, sometimes I think. But I mean, I'm digging what I'm doing now. It's just, I think like there's going to be a period for these next couple of years that, I mean, time will tell what's going to happen. And it's just, I think, a period that I'm going to be going through that's going to be kind of difficult for me, you know. I mean, I think I'm gonna be abused a bit. I mean, we are in our own way. I mean, whatever trip that we're going through. I mean,
gone through a lot of changes, which I think I'm going to go through. Because I'm going to be rejected a lot, you know?
Maybe unused to certain responses.
Yeah, a lot more time to sit back and analyze what you're doing yourself.
Yeah, that kind of scares me, too. I mean, I'm real impulsive. I like to go out and just...
You don't have to think about it.
I think without doubt, you know... Without doubt, in the future, when all this is over, you're going to sit back and you'll have regrets and you'll have, you know, things which you'll say, well, I did that right, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think everybody does that. Yeah, that's life. I mean, that's living, you know? I think now, leaving the touring thing here and ending it here...
You're leaving on a high.
That's exactly it. That's why I want to leave it there, you know. I would like to go out with a little style and...
Nice one.
You know, yeah.
In fact, Sinatra did the same, though,
He retired
back a year.
I don't
think you'll...
He didn't retire. I mean, I'm not retiring, you know. He said, I'm not working.
A long drive.
I'm working. I mean, I'm working. I'm doing a television special. I'm doing this.
What did you say? You're getting your head together.
I just say I'm going to start living, you know, and start living as a human being.
As near as possible as you can, like you haven't been for the past.
You know, you don't appear on a golf course or anything like that.
Back against the pressures, David, which... This is exactly what I'm going to say. I mean, people listening to this show tonight on radio look at me, oh, that's David Cassidy, and he's talking about himself. They don't realize that you've talked about yourself around the world now for 3 months. And 4 years, you've talked all over the world about yourself continuously. And Andy Williams was over here a week ago, and I heard from a recording company source that during the course of a lot of interviews, he suddenly put his hand up and said, I'm sorry, I'm not doing any more interviews. And he gave the reason, he said, listen, talking about oneself as much as I've been doing, you begin to hate oneself. And I got to that stage where I'm hating myself, now leave me alone, because I don't like to hate myself.
I don't feel like talking about myself when you're asking me questions and I'm going to start hating myself. I do think you tend to analyze what you're doing a little too much. People ask me all the time, what about this, what about that, what about this? Yeah. Well, I never really thought about it before, so I don't know.
Yeah. You're not worrying about it.
Maybe I should start worrying about it, you know. I'm not worried about it. I mean, I feel very good about me and what I'm doing.
Maybe it's just the cruise alone and just go with the flow.
You know? Sure.
Are you influenced by anyone?
Give me a guitar and all.
Give me a guitar.
I can give you a guitar.
I'm influenced by everybody, you know. I mean, everything.
Is there anybody in particular who influences you? A friend like Kim and Dave, your friends? Do they influence you?
Yeah, but I don't think, I mean, to a greater degree than anybody else. I think perhaps obviously we all have people that are closer to us than others, and I have a couple of close friends that know me better than obviously anybody else in the world, and I care about their friendship more than I care about
the value of that.
I think that they have a much more objective viewpoint of what I'm doing and who I am than I do at times.
Yeah.
The main thing is that I follow my heart, you know. I mean, I do what I want to do and what I think is right. And, I mean, I listen to people who I trust and who I love. I listen to their advice, but most of the time I just got to do what I got to do.
Oh, it's best to let it go. day for a daydream. What a day for a daydreamer. I'm lost in a daydream. I'm dreaming about my bundle of joy.
To Radio Luxembourg. And Tony Prince, Mark Wesley, and Dave Christian questioning David Cassidy on the 208 Cassidy interview 1974.
You told me at Christmas, David, that you hoped Kim and Dave would join you on this tour. Have they, in fact, come along?
No.
They haven't?
They haven't.
Is there anybody?
They're on the first part of it, actually. But they're doing their own careers now, you know, and they're doing pretty well. They've got, they're writing, you know, and they're, I think Kim's doing an album with Steve Cropper, I think, in the States, and she, you know, they're both really, really good and really talented, and they should go off and, instead of being, like, standing in back, singing background for me, you know, they should go off and do what they want to do in their own right.
Have you brought any of the musicians over on Dreams and Nothing More Than Wishes?
Me, and two of the singers, yeah. I've got a good band.
Trish
and Gloria. Yeah, they're both real good. Yeah.
Do you spend a lot of time rehearsing before you actually go on tour?
No. I don't. I don't have that much time, you know. I had a week off between the time I finished the Partridge Family and the time I left for New Zealand. And in a week, I mean, I had to put the whole thing together.
Well, come along and I'll try and follow, so
that's... No, I mean, I got good players who don't need an awful lot of rehearsing. I mean, I need more rehearsing than they do.
You mean they can read music?
I mean, they actually do, yes.
Wow.
It's the big time. I mean, this is no... I like to get players that are good players, but personally, you can get along with them. When you go out on the road with someone for 3 months, you know, personalities play a big part in what you're doing. And
you can come to grief, actually.
Yeah, it can be terrible. And I've had a couple of people that have come along that I thought were cool, and I thought I would be able to get along with, or someone. It's not usually me so much as other people in the band coming to me about so-and-so, I'm going to kill him, I'm going to break the window over his head, you know.
Yeah.
And it's... But, you know, it's all on my shoulders, and I have to sit and wear it out. Well, do I have to let him go? Do I have to fire him? And, you know, should I keep him up? That becomes a drag, you know. I've been pretty lucky, though. This time I got a real good band. I mean, we're smoking now.
Cooking.
Smoking. Not overcooked.
Where's the ant this time?
You had your problems cut out on the last tour.
If I had tried, I don't think I could have brought a lot of more incompetent people that I had left. I mean, not all around, but there were a few on the tour that just... I mean, they didn't...
David, you never wanted to look too far in the future. That's what you told me at Christmas.
I don't. I like sort of taking things as they come, and... I can't really look too far in the future. I don't know what I'll be doing.
But have you any hopes? Have you got a vision of what you would like to see, like David Cassidy when he's like 60 years old? What do you dream? You're going to get married, have a bunch of kids sitting on a rocking chair?
I could do that, yeah. I would like to do that. I mean, that appeals to me, that thought. I mean, not now, because I don't think I'm emotionally ready for that.
No.
I don't think that there's enough time in my life for that. But I think eventually I would love to do that. And I think that, you know, experiencing life alone, so to speak. I mean, we all experience it alone, but having someone to share it with, you know, that you really care about, I think, is what it's all about. Is what living is all about to me, you know, and having someone, well, I don't want to get that political about it, but I mean, that's really, I think, to me, essentially what I would love to happen. But not now, you know, not now. When the time is right, I'm sure it'll happen, you know.
I wish you would.
David Cassidy interview 74 was recorded on Thursday, the 23rd of May at our London headquarters. In a moment, we'll be back with David, the Prince, the Woolly, and the Christian. But now...
Stars.
Yes, I know how to say.
Terms with myself, you know, about
it. Just you don't like the way they rear the meat. Some of it's reared in the daylight and this kind of
thing. Let me just say this about it. It's real simple. I can't justify going into a store and buying something like a steak or something like that and whatever it is and eating it if I couldn't go out and do it in myself. You know, I mean, I eat shellfish because I've taken clams out of the sand.
Yeah.
They're the most thing to eat in that way, you know. I mean, I couldn't go out and slaughter a cat, so I don't eat beef, you know?
Maybe you could, though, if you weren't in a civilized generation. Yeah,
maybe I could, but I can't.
Yeah.
You know, I know this person cannot.
Yeah.
So that's all. I just don't. I did.
You got
I like
that of your own conviction.
People, yeah, I just don't, you know, I don't know. It's real easy to get into, you know, saying, well, are you putting down people? I don't. Anybody will eat whatever they want to eat, you know, just for me. It's all, you know, in the individual and how they look at it. I mean, my diet is, I think, just what's right for me. I mean, I eat the food that I feel the best about, you know, and I eat, I guess I am a vegetarian, although I do eat fish occasionally, and I do eat shellfish. But it's only if I can justify going out and killing it myself.
Yeah. Some good friends of ours, who are very beautiful human beings, I'm sure you will agree, the Osmonds.
Thank you very much. Oh, sure.
The Osmonds.
I don't know what matters.
Haven't held back on the fact that they are Mormon, and they use this to influence their fellow human beings and therefore the fans, into believing in the Mormon religion. I suppose that's pretty fair when you consider they're Mormons and they really believe in the religion.
Yeah.
And the religion say we've got to go out and spread the word, and it just happens as a pop group. Are there any ways you would like to influence your fans?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I would only like them to do whatever is right for them, and I do whatever is right for me, and I've never felt right about saying, well, look it, you know, I smoke RCA, so you should smoke RCA. And that doesn't make any sense, you know, for me. Because what's right for me is only right for me, and it only applies to what I'm doing in my life.
You're an individual.
Yeah.
And this is what you want to pursue further.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that whatever they do in their way, I mean, they obviously feel that, you know, going around and telling everybody they should be Mormons or whatever it is, and that's the right way to do it, it's just their prerogative.
They believe in it.
They believe in
the same way you believe that people should do their own thing, whatever
exactly.
they want.
I mean, I think whatever it is that gets you there, whatever gets you high, whatever does it for you, you know, whether it's eating vegetables or it's going out and shooting quail, whatever it is, man. I mean, you know, it doesn't even have to apply to food. It just applies to living, you know, and doing whatever it is that you want to do.
You're here in Britain, David, and you're always welcome to join us. We're always very pleased to see you.
No pack drill or anything.
Yeah, but, you know, you've never been here under any circumstances other than your tour. And
the pressure's on the tour.
Are there going to be any let-up on those pressures during your stay here? under any circumstances other than your tour?
Of course, your younger tour.
Mm-hmm. Are there going to be any let-up on these pressures during your stay here?
I don't know. Well, that's difficult for me to say. Here I am trying to predict what's going to happen in the next, like, week and a half. I will be in Great Britain.
We've got any days without any plans, for example.
Not.
I got all my days full.
But if it was something that were just laid upon me at the last minute, look, can I spend the next week and a half, day and night, doing interviews and filming and doing concerts and so and so, I would be disappointed. But I brought it on myself, you know. I mean, I said, okay, I'm going to go out on tour, and this is what I'm going to do. And I know by this time what goes along with all that, what accompanies it all. And this is just part of it, you know. It's just part of, like what you do, you know. It's flying to L.A. to give me a silver disc or something. Or whatever it is, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just part of my occupation, I guess.
As regards to the choice of the singers that you've done up to now, what will...
I didn't even like to do with them.
Okay, so I don't care. It wouldn't necessarily be indicative of...
It's
Zones and Noses would be more like it.
Yeah,
Zones and Noses.
No,
a lot of people thought it was a Coke song. Hey, man, it's really a hit.
That's the B-side of your new record.
Yeah, right.
And I think it's as strong as the A-side, actually.
A lot of people wanted it to be the A-side. I, in a way, wanted it to be, but, I sort of trusted the fact that it was like the record of the year in 1939, if I didn't care. And I think that the song is a great song. Frozen Noses is a good song. It's my song. And,
When did you write it? Where did you get the
inspiration?
In December.
Yeah, I was, I write sometimes subjectively, and I wrote about me being with someone else, you know, and I wrote about, like, me being in a, I saw myself being, like, in a hotel room, and looking down on a street, like, you know, in a small town, Midwestern kind of a town, and like a college town.
It was imagination, it wasn't fact, in fact.
It was based on fact, but I just sort of allowed my imagination to carry it away, you know, and I got caught in the snow, and it's really romantic. I mean, that really moved me, and I was out there, and it was freezing, and we were bundled up together, and it was just real nice. So I just imagined someone looking at it, you know, and in the songs, lyrically, it goes into detail about that.
Thank you.
think you probably feel more warm about snow than we do over here.
Yeah, because I only get to experience it every now and then. I mean,
Listen, as regards your off-scene or off-stage activities, would you do
Do you fancy about producing other people going into that aspect?
I've thought about it, but to be honest with you, I could perhaps do that, and I would perhaps like to experiment a little bit, but
write for somebody else.
I'm not a producer. I can't. I can only write for... You know, I'm not a writer like that. I'm not a songwriter who can sit down and do that. I'm not, you know, like so many of them, they can sit down and give them a project and say, okay, you know, write another poem.
In fact,
the guy who comes only writes for an hour and runs with him.
In many cases, you probably have to turn to Kim and Dave, your co-songwriters, to finish a project for you.
To finish a project, yeah. I mean, like, I usually get inspired, I get an idea, and I leave it there, and it sits around, and I'm sitting around playing it sometime, and they'll hear it, and they say, well, hey, that's good, let's fit me back at home sometimes, and we, you know, I mean, we've worked together quite well. I haven't written with him really since the last album, and I'm writing a lot more on my own now, and at frozen noses I wrote on my own. I don't write very much, you know. I probably write 5-6 songs a year, and I write in spurts sometimes. I write 3 songs in a week, and then I don't write for 4 months. You know, so
you got to keep a songwriting, one particular style that you've got into, and you think
you find some particular chords that you like and you use them a lot.
Just mostly, I mean, I write about what moves me are just people. So I
It
depends on each time I write a song. It's different. Sometimes, like, Frozen Noses, I just said Frozen Noses, you know, when I got Frozen Noses. And it just sounded real good together.
You sound like you come from Oldham.
Frozen Noses.
Lovely. Hey, listen, David, do you still intend to start a construction company in LA?
David, welcome back to Britain again.
Thank you.
Tonight, as this goes out earlier, they've got 40,000 fans in front of you. Probably at the very same time we're talking and you're performing live. This was recorded a few days before it's going out. But we're repeating it the following Friday, next Friday. Perhaps you'd like to just say a quick hi to the guy who didn't hear it on Sunday, who are listening tonight, Friday.
Hey, quick hi.
David, have a nice day with us and have a nice life. And I hope everything works out the way you hope it'll work.
Thanks.
So do I.
Good to see you again.
See you in luck again another time.
Okay.
And then they got David. They got David. Thursday, the 23rd of May. And thanks to the help of one David Cassidy, Radio 208 kept its word again and provided the loyalists down in the street with a closer look at him than most of them had ever dreamed of. Standing on the balcony of 208's Hartford Street offices, David waved and smiled a mere 15 feet above the heads of the crowd below. And so ended 208's Cassidy interview, 1974.
Hi, this is David Cassidy, and it's really a beautiful day here in Los Angeles, where I live. So I decided to take a little time out from my regular recording schedule and make this little tape for you all. I'm presently sitting here in my music room with my trusty friend and companion. The track you just heard comes from a new album that I just finished recording this week. I've been working on some really different material for this LP, and I'm really, really excited about it. And I'm actually really excited about letting you hear it. So when you do, why don't you drop me a line and let me know what you think about it? Okay? I really appreciate that. Well, so far, the summer's just been fantastic. And, you know, I've started off with my visit to Europe and in particular Great Britain. And I just wanted to tell you that how much that experience has been. It's really been sure I'll never forget. My only regret is that I didn't get a chance to see more of Great Britain, but I hope to be able to make more time for sightseeing and whatnot next time I come, which would probably give me the opportunity to meet more of you personally. I wish there had been more time this trip, but I guess that's just one of those things. Because of all the friends I was able to make in Britain, I'd really like to be able to come back more often. Perhaps I might even rent a house or something so I can get a chance to take a time off and vacation. But unfortunately, I've really been tied up this year. Since I saw you last, I've been working hard filming on the last season of the Partridge Family for television. Yeah. Well, it hasn't all been work, but I guess I'm really lucky to have a place to go to when I'm free as a musician. I often go to Hawaii, and I have some friends there, and I'm able to be myself and relax.
Y'all know what I say, you just can't go home again. Yes, I know what I say, you just can't go home again.
You know, I've been thinking a lot about my plans for winter, and one of the things I'm really looking forward to doing is skiing. I really love to ski, and I'm finally getting pretty fair at it. As a matter of fact, I even managed to get in some skiing on my last trip to Europe in Spain. And who knows, maybe I'll even get a chance to ski on your slopes in Scotland, too. Which brings me to one of the nicest thoughts about winter is the thought of perhaps seeing you all again. I'm trying to arrange to come over on another tour, so let's all keep our fingers crossed and perhaps it'll happen. I know I can't think of a better way to spend my Christmas holidays. Because Christmas is a really warm, peaceful feeling that we all get, and it's the kind of feeling that you can only get by being around people that you really care about, that you really love. Well, I've got to get back to work now, but before I do, I just wanted to wish you all a very Merry Christmas and a whole lot of love. A couple of weeks before I'll be returning to the United Kingdom again for the start of my first concert tour. And, I just can't really even tell you how excited I am about it. I've never been so apprehensive about any single performance or tour before in my life. As a matter of fact, I may have an anxiety attack right now. Actually, you really were so beautiful to me the last time and gave me such an incredible reception. I only hope this next trip can be even better. I mean, by the way, while I'm thinking about it, I really, really have to thank you all so much for giving me such a tremendous send-off at the airport and making my stay on the boat on the Thames so great. You all sang so beautifully on the shore. Got some great sleep tonight, I really did. I also want to thank you all for writing. As you can probably guess, I can't answer them all, but I read as many of them as I can, and answer a few as well. But I do want you to know that I appreciate all your kindness and all your thoughts. I suppose I've rapped on enough by now, and I really was never much good at talking anyway, you know. I'm a terrific little dancer and a marvelous little piano player. So I'll leave you with a thought for all my melody readers and all my fans that will make 1973 the greatest year for all of us. Until then, God bless. Be happy.
Up there, but they were old plastic records and I just wanted to take them down. So sorry, David, for making you sound grumpy at times and cutting you off of one because it didn't fit on the other end. So we did away with Shawaddy Waddy, which were also at the concert on May the 26th, 1974 at White City.
Close my eyes and I trace the footpath to your daddy's summer place, where we spent our early summer days. The hill we climbed, it went on forever. To me, and I remember.